All right, everyone, we've got a really cool episode for you today. On today's episode, we have Lin Chen, who is a 22-year-old serial entrepreneur that went from starting Tough Candy to being the COO of Layer CI, a software product that helps developers build web apps faster. Lin also dropped out of school to go and receive the Thiel Fellowship and even took Layer CI through Y Combinator. So we talk about that and some of the stories that she has to share from that as well. And on today's episode, you can learn all about the stories behind how Layer CI got started, how Lin goes about learning new skills, how she builds a world-class network and meets with founders like the CEO of Adidas and so much more, and how she goes and gets her first 1,000 users every time she goes and starts a new business. So without further ado, I hope you guys enjoy today's episode, and here is Lin. You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast,
weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
Lin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we typically like to start off our episodes by asking the guests to give a quick overview on who they are and some of the interesting stuff they've done.
Cool. Tell me about yourself is still the interview question you get, even when you become an entrepreneur. My name is Lin. I'm 22 years old. And currently I work as, I would say, anything that's not related to tech at Layer CI. How I got here is I was a founder before at an e-commerce startup called Tough Candy. And then prior to that, I also traveled the world working in places like Tokyo and New York for B2B SaaS companies. And on the side, I love to volunteer. I love to read. And I am also a huge advocate for women in tech.
That's awesome. And first of all, props to you for at least including like the on the side portion. I feel like so often we talk to entrepreneurs and it's like, nope, my life and my personality is this business and this is what I do. But I know you also do like powerlifting and all that kind of stuff too, and you travel a lot. So that's really cool. For people who aren't familiar with Layer CI, and especially for the people who are not familiar and not technical, could you go and give like an overview of like what you would tell your parents or like what you would go and tell someone who has no technical background what Layer CI is and does?
Sure, for sure. So I guess in layman's terms, Layer CI helps software developers. We believe software developers are building, I would say, like the highway of the internet, right? They're basically like construction workers of the internet, and to support them, you got to give them the right tools. And so Layer CI is one of those tools that helps you make sure the quality of the products and features that you're pushing out are great, that it creates great customer experiences, and that you're working with your team every day. No matter where you are in the world, you're able to collaborate in real time or, you know, asynchronous. So being able to collaborate better, being able to work better, creates more enjoyable workplaces in tech, but also enjoyable products that power so many of the world's things all around the world, right? So that's kind of in layman's terms what Layer CI does.
And Layer CI, though, wasn't your first venture in terms of going the entrepreneurship route, right? You had done, you mentioned some traveling before, but then also Tough Candy. Could you kind of dive into what Tough Candy was and the background there?
Sure. So when I started Tough Candy, it was about 4 or 5 years ago. And at that point, people were just starting to realize how big of a problem plastic waste was. And I thought, okay, this is really interesting. What's a unique approach to solving this problem? So the most unique approach I could think of is, what if we ate our spoon? So what if we ate our spoon? What if we ate our forks? What if we ate our glasses? And that way, you know, you can either eat it or throw it in the waste and it would decompose. So that's essentially what we did at Tough Candy. We made innovative products for other e-commerce companies as well as our own. Our pilot product was really just edible utensils you can eat at restaurants, at, you know, catering parties, at ice cream stores or hotels. And after you eat your ice cream or, you know, eat your food, you can eat the spoon or throw it away.
So how do you even go about starting something like that? Because I'm thinking like, you know, if I want to go and turn around and start like a mug company, like it's pretty easy. Like I Google like mug manufacturers, right? And I know that there's a handful of people out there who are probably thinking like, oh my gosh, you know what? Like I just need to go and start this one food company, this one tea company, whatever it is. But like you're kind of dealing with a whole different beast out there. Like on one side, what you're doing now is you're creating and selling software, right? And worst case scenario, what happens with software is like,
bad code goes out or something like that, right? Worst case scenario of what happens with food is like somebody has an allergic reaction and doesn't take too easily to it. So how do you go about even like sourcing and finding the products and creating all of that?
Yeah, I gotta say, worst thing in the world for code not to be, there was like so many outages in 2000 when people thought the world was ending.
Maybe I'm underselling it a little bit.
I totally agree. Like both ventures are super, you know, high trust, reliability is of utmost importance in both. So I totally agree with you there. I think getting into these industries first requires, you know, some level of research, some level of understanding. So going about it on your own and learning as much as you can in a very short period of time about who you're dealing with, who you're helping, having a lot of empathy for the people you're building for, regardless of the product, whether it's tech or food or something else, right? I think that's the biggest importance versus going about it and saying, how do I make money today or tomorrow, right? The second thing is, after you do your own basic research, how do you kind of establish credibility as well as kind of go beyond, you know, how do you learn so much in a short period of time? And it's really just to surround yourself with experts. When we started Tough Candy, what we did was go to the number one food scientist in the world and go and talk to him and say, okay, how do I make this a reality? Here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? Right. And having them basically say, well, actually, no, you should do this, or no, actually, you should do that. And that actually, you know, leveraging someone's 20, 30, 50 years of experience is super invaluable. And I think a lot of these mentors and experts are really happy to help entrepreneurs out, because it's really cool to start, be a part of something new.
How do you actually go about finding those experts, right? And is there an expert website where I can go to and kind of type in a category, or are you just picking up the phone and cold calling people?
Yeah, there's definitely websites now like LinkedIn, or you know, very niche websites of, oh, go find an expert on X or Y. But yeah, I would say email goes a long way, calling goes a long way, LinkedIn goes a long way, and introductions to people's networks goes a long way as well. So just kind of figure out, where do people hang out in a professional setting, and going to look for them. Most famously, I think, someone like Elon, I read in his his biography that when he was in Canada, he basically would commute to Toronto after cold calling, because there was not much email activity going on then, or LinkedIn, right? Just cold calling with his older brother and going to Toronto to meet people, to learn about banks. So he would meet CEOs of banks. That's how he got his first internship, and that's how he discovered PayPal.
That's amazing. I feel like we mentioned this in the last episode that we just did, but like, people today are genuinely afraid of like just picking up a phone and like actually going and making a phone call. So often we're finding that you're more comfortable maybe even like sending a Twitter DM or sending an email, but like talking to someone that you have no idea and just asking really obvious questions like, hey, how do I start a food brand? Like, do you think that this is a good idea, right? It tends to go and be a very underrated skill these days. I was just going to say, in terms of like where you went with the brand and how you got started and where it went, like, I remember reading an article back in 2017 from you that says like your goal by 2020 was to mitigate 1 million pieces of plastic from landfills, which like super ambitious goal. Like that's awesome, right? Whether that's through like the cane sugar forks and spoons and all that kind of stuff, or like the small glasses you guys are making. Where did you guys actually end up with that brand?
Yeah, so I definitely didn't hit that entire goal, right? A million by 2020 was really difficult goal to hit, but instead we ended up getting to about 100,000, which is still a pretty big deal to me. Like, I think if we aimed really low and said, you know, 1,000 or something, we would be able to maybe hit it. But actually going to 1 million, part of it is also the advocacy portion of it, right? Just being able to spread awareness of it. Someone didn't realize this was a big issue, and maybe they're not using it now. So the actual full number could be a lot bigger than we imagined.
What was that transition like to go from running the food and candy company to then, you know, deciding that maybe this isn't exactly what you wanted to do, or it doesn't have the scale, or maybe you weren't hitting some of the metrics you wanted, to then transition over into tech? Did you, you know, how did you end up leaving Tough? And then what did that transition look like?
Yeah, for sure. I guess the reason I wanted to do TUF was because, you know, here's an obvious problem that we can solve it with a very easy MVP, as long as you understood food and you got the expertise around that. And then I remember a great conversation I had with the previous CEO of Adidas, and I saw that his first internship was at a candy company. So I asked, "Hey, why did you do this? And, you know, what did you learn? Right? How did you become who you are today?" And he said something along the lines of, "Well, I got rejected from all my other internships, but when I understood food, I understood everything else regarding supply chain at this particular company." Right. So I think the learning aspect was really important, and I felt like I had learned a lot, but there was more I wanted to learn. So I think with learning being my motivation, I thought, okay, how do I learn things in a very quick, a fast period of time? How can I, you know, influence and help people in a very short period of time? And everything was pointing towards technology, right? As I mentioned again, my co-founder says this a lot, but it's like the highway of the internet. So how do you be a part of that so that you can influence change and you can make things that really help people?
I mean, it definitely allows you to impact the most amount of people directly, right? And to your comment on supply chain, I can't really imagine trying to handle food supply chain. Even like Connor and I have been doing phone accessory supply chain, and that itself had so many problems, you know, trying to work around like expiration dates and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
I can definitely imagine you learned a lot about supply chain there and how that operates. I'm curious, how did you get that phone call with the former Adidas CEO? I think you seem to have some really interesting people that you've been able to connect with. Was that kind of a cold outreach or a mutual connection there?
Yeah, I was lucky that I just went to a conference about marketing. That was kind of the way in. Not everything has to be a cold call for sure. It's still a huge skill. But just being in the right places, I guess, in non-remote times. And then hopefully that opportunity opens up in the future as well for folks who want to travel and meet people.
So for people who are listening to this today and saying like, wow, it seems like Lynn's got a pretty big network, she's learning things really quickly, like, that's awesome, I want to go and be like that. Aside from just saying, hey, reach out to a bunch of people and learn from people who have already been doing this for 20 to 30 years, what are some tips that you give to people who want to go and learn a new skill or industry super quickly? I know, like, you know, as we record this today, like, crypto is a really big space right now, right? Like, say I want to go and turn around, and I don't know if you know anything about cryptocurrencies or anything, but say I want to turn around and find out a bunch of stuff. How would you go about doing something like that today?
Yeah, I think first it requires a bit of self-understanding and a bit of self-awareness of what am I actually good at, what am I bad at, and how do I learn? I think, how do I learn? That question doesn't get asked a lot because you're often handed these strategies as you're going through school and things like that, right? There's just kind of like a cookie cutter way of doing things. But for example, for myself, I only can learn through doing. I know that as a fact that as much as I read, I'm not going to digest it unless I actually apply, and then I'll remember it forever. So knowing that's how I learn, I need to talk to those people, listen to their stories, and kind of, you know, teach someone else about it to remember it, or do it myself to remember it. So given that's the fact, you know, other than, you know, basic strategies, I would say figure out how you learn best, and then pick up the book if you feel like that's the way you go. Pick up that podcast or, you know, Medium article if that works better for you, or talk to someone.
I'm assuming you must have had an interesting learning curve during that transition period, jumping into Layer CI from a relatively, it seems like, a non-technical co-founder perspective. Well, how did that initial phase look? Like, how did you guys even come up with the plan? And then how did you kind of integrate yourself to feel comfortable with some of the aspects going on there?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely the pain point of that Layer CI was solving and still continues to solve today was mainly through my co-founder's experience as CTO of a SaaS company. And actually taking the time to listen to him and his pain point and having a lot of empathy for him during that period, it was really important. And then, you know, being really curious, asking questions asking questions that seem, you know, very obvious to some people, but maybe not so obvious when you're first learning things is super important. I actually like made myself like a dictionary of terms and things like that, and then I would like try to use it in every single conversation. But also one of the biggest breakthroughs for us that got us into things like Y Combinator, the Teal Fellowship, and actually ultimately our fundraise was actually taking the time, and instead of starting off with a pitch like, hey, we do this, right? You go up to, you know, the end user software developers and saying, what are you building? Asking, what are you building, right? And just hearing about their day, hearing about the pains in their day that are, you know, maybe even sometimes non-technical, like, hey, I want to get home on time so I can play a video game, or I want to get home on time so I could take care of my daughter. Like, those are conversations that I don't think are asked a lot, because they're kind of indirect results of, you know, the impact of whatever you're building. So I think in problem discovery, like talking to, you know, 1,000 people was probably one of the biggest ways we learned about the problem, other than solving something for ourselves. So that's kind of the way I went about learning.
I think I'm going to keep asking similar questions here. How did you guys get 1,000 people on the phone to go through this? Because it makes a lot of sense to me, right? Talk to as many people as you can, find their problems, and you'll have a much better product.
Yeah, for sure. So well, first off,
it sounds so much easier than actually doing. So yeah, curious about that.
Yeah. So I basically started off with a plan. Okay, let's reach out to your current network, then let's reach out to those networks, then let's reach out to some groups, and then let's reach out to individual people. So if you go off and say, I'm going to reach out to 100 people a day, it only takes 10 days to get there, right? So, you know, and then you just repeat that cycle until you've spoken to 1,000 people. So we did that in the course of 3 months. And getting early users required that amount of persistence as well. So it took, you know, about a couple hundred people to get to our first customer, and even our first user who would try it out for free. Because again, it's a matter of trust building, about listening to people, about actually building something people want. And I think a lot of people overcomplicate this, right? Oh, I got to make like a 20 page business plan, and I got to reach out to the XY people. But really, at the end of the day, you just got to do it. So yeah, I think that's my biggest strategy, just going out and doing.
Yeah, and I feel like that's, like, usually people have the high level goal as to like where they want to be, right? I want to build $1 million company. I want to build like $100 million real estate portfolio, like whatever you want to go and do. But then they kind of get lost in the, how do I actually go and do that from step by step to the most simplest step, right? And a lot of times it starts with, okay, let me go and talk to one person, right? Like, usually I can go and I'm holding up a notebook right here, but like I can write down, here's my goal. And that's usually where most people go and end, because they have no idea how to go and get there. I think if you make a habit of saying, hey, we're going to talk to 10 software developers today, I'm going to send 10 emails today, even if no one responds, like, at least I know that this is an action or an input that I can control. I might not be able to control the output of, you know, getting them to give me their credit card information to make them a customer, but like, here's the information I can do to go and take the steps towards that goal. So I really like how you set that up. And you talked a little bit about, like, you know, Y Combinator and Teal Fellowship and all that stuff. I want to get into that in just a little bit, but before we get there, I do want to really learn, like, how did you meet your co-founder in the first place, and why work with a co-founder versus going out and wanting to start your own business?
Yeah, for sure. So in both my ventures, I had co-founders, and having a co-founder is so amazing, because not only do you share, I guess, the experiences together, you're kind of on this journey together, as you guys are, but also, you know, it's hard to build a business alone. Right? Just building a business alone, like, you only got two hands, and like, you can only do so much at a time. So having to switch your focus from programming to sales to, you know, finances and the hiring, like, all of that is being a generalist is really difficult, and doing everything exceptionally well is really difficult. I don't think I know anyone in the world who is good at absolutely everything on that standpoint. So having someone who's absolutely exceptional at, you know, one thing or two things, and then you supporting the rest with things that you're exceptional at is the best balance. In terms of how I found my co-founder, we are both in Toronto, and we all ran in the same circles, but He was already in tech. He was looking at an entrepreneurship program as I was. And so I found him in a Slack group. And then I took it to LinkedIn and we chatted when I was in New York and he was in Toronto. And I just kept asking him about his days and like what he's doing. And he seemed like a really cool guy. So I was like, hey, let's go for coffee. And so we went for coffee, even before he met all the other entrepreneurial hopefuls, at this, tech program or tech accelerator. And right then and there, he already knew he wanted to be my co-founder. So just kind of like building that relationship early on and taking the time, it's almost like dating to some degree, right? Or like making a new friend, right? Seeing if you guys have similar values, similar goals and dreams, and really taking your time to meet the person. So that happened over the course of, I would say, 3-6 months, actually starting to build that relationship together, starting to build things together, and actually working on the venture full time together.
Did you kind of see the project he was working on and say, okay, this project looks really interesting? Or had you decided that, you know, you didn't really, it wasn't the project first, it was him as a co-founder first? Which avenue really drove you to trying to, you know, connect with him and see if you guys were a match?
Yeah, it was definitely him as a co-founder. Because your business will continue to change even in micro pivots, right? Like it's never the same business as it was day zero. And if it is, you're probably either super lucky or doing it wrong. So it's like one or the other. Your business will always change. Maybe it's not really obvious that it has, but it will always change. The person who stays the same is you know, the person you work with.
Right. Yeah, I two comments that you just made there that I really liked. I mean, the first was just the fact that it's like dating. And I think a lot of people make the mistake, and you did it perfectly from the way it sounds, of, you know, forming a relationship. How is your day? Oh, you want to jump on a call? Oh, what are you working on these days? Like all that kind of stuff. Like you build it up over time, and then eventually you kind of see like what they're like as a person. And then, you know, you pop the question of like, yeah, you want to start a company together or whatever. Whereas I think a lot of people make the mistake of they're just like, they don't make that connection. And they start thinking like, oh, I'm not technical. You're technical. Like, let's go and start a company right away. And it fails because you're like, hey, we don't work well together. I don't like the way you like build certain things. Like it just takes a lot of time to go and get that right. And I really like how you kind of approached it from a side of patience of being like, let me learn more about this person. And, you know, if it works out in a couple months, then perfect. Then we'll go and take the next step. And the second thing that I want to bring up was just that, like you mentioned, hey, like being a generalist and a generalist of someone who's really good at everything, not that's hard, right? But not only that, but from like a co-founder standpoint, hey, it helps a ton having someone focus on product, someone focus on the commercial side of the business, but like emotionally, mentally, right? Like you lose like half your customers, or like, you know, the product goes down for the day or something like that. And it's like taking all of that burden and all of that stress on yourself seems terrible. At least having one other person to like, you know, be there with you on you know, your side of the ship helps a lot. And same thing with the ups too. It's like when you win from a company standpoint, like having someone there to kind of go and, you know, celebrate the wins too is always really helpful.
It's interesting because it doesn't really take away from the upside, right? Like the highs are even more fun with a co-founder, and then the lows, you know, at least you're there to support each other, and they're just not as low. So you have, you know, higher highs and not as low lows. So, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, making sure you have the right fit in the beginning is, I think, extremely important.
For sure.
Why did you go to Queen's University?
Yeah, I went to Queen's partially because if you haven't noticed already, I'm a huge Elon fan and a fan of their family in general. So that was something that was interesting to me. I saw Michelle Romano was there as well. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And also, I think to some degree, I didn't know what I wanted to do yet. And I just wanted to be out of the house and kind of be on my own and see what I really liked. And I think that was a perfect combination to figure out, okay, yes, I want to do this thing called entrepreneurship for a really long time, or be a part of this space for a really long time. And so, yeah, that's pretty much why I went to Queens.
Were you the kid that was always coming up with different side hustles and you knew you wanted to go the entrepreneurship route forever? Or did you kind of transition into that? It seems like you've always wanted to do it.
Yeah, well, I guess for some context and background, My family immigrated to from China to Canada when I was about 5 years old. They're highly educated people. They were teachers there and engineers. And when they came here, their degrees didn't matter. They couldn't get a job. And so they did entrepreneurship out of necessity. And I didn't realize that it was, you know, an attractive career to some degree aimed by society at the time. I just realized they needed to make money and I wanted to help them as much as possible. And so given that, honestly, they never encouraged me to go into entrepreneurship, especially e-commerce, because that's where the business they're in. Kind of seeing it from their perspective, I'm like, okay, I understand. What they're really hoping for me is that I like what I do and that I never go hungry. And so given those things, I knew, okay, the way to kind of start a business is if you really know that there's nothing really out there that's gonna really be able to do the things that you wanna do. So I didn't really see a company out there that was, you know, doing something like Tough Candy. I didn't really see a company out there that was doing something like Lear CI. And so there was a gap to fill. There were some people that could be helped. And so knowing that, that's how you take the jump. I knew it was going to be exceptionally hard to raise. I knew it was going to be exceptionally hard to find a co-founder, et cetera. So learning on the skills to be prepared for those opportunities is really important. So what was it? Some quote says, like, what is it? Success is when opportunity meets preparation, something like that. So being prepared for those moments, those key moments, like finding a co-founder, estimating a business, all of that requires a lot of patience and skill. So
that's funny. That's definitely one of Gio's favorite quotes. I feel like I hear him say that like one or two times a week. With your parents' background being in education and, you know, they were teachers and all that stuff, was it kind of tough when you had to have that conversation with them about, hey, I want to actually go and leave school and run a company full time? And can you kind of talk about, A, you know, what your parents responded, and then also how the decision to leave school actually came about?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, my dad's got a master's degree. If he could go all the way to PhD, he would have. And so, you know, they, again, value education a lot. So I prompted them over the years because I wasn't a particularly star student. I was only mediocre at everything. And so, you know, I would ask them, you know, when I was in eighth grade, hey, you know, if I didn't do school in the future, what would you think? And like, you know, they would say, oh, absolutely not, unless you had a good reason. And then I'm like, okay, so what is a good enough reason? And so I would generally prompt them. But at the end of the day, I think traveling and learning all these things, being away from all your family members, your friends for a short period of time, I actually thought was really helpful because you get to be influenced by your own experiences and your own kind of thoughts. And in that moment, I realized, okay, I don't think going all the way in school is for me. And you know, I'm racking up a lot of debt. I want to repay this debt and go into entrepreneurship. And having spoken to lots of entrepreneurs, having traveled, I realized, okay, this is what I want to do. And so that's kind of how I brought it up to them. And when I got TI, I think that was the first time they really realized, oh wow, like she's getting recognized for some of the things that she's doing. And you know, that was really nice for that you know, they felt confident that it was a good choice.
I was just gonna say, can you explain what the TIO fellowship is for everyone who isn't familiar with it?
Sure. So it's Peter Thiel, co-founder of PayPal and Palantir's, I would say like anti-school program. I would say like not anti-education, but like anti-school program for kids that are actually, you know, better off actually going and doing projects in science and in tech and you know, elsewhere. So instead of going to school, you drop out for at least 2 years and you go and build something. So you have to be actively building that thing for 2 years. So lots of really cool people came out of it in tech, such as the co-founder of Figma and Ethereum, actually.
Oh, no way. I didn't know it was Vitalik, right? Is the
Ethereum
co-founder. And I think you maybe missed an important part. They do give you a pretty big grant, right?
Yeah, they give you 100K.
To go and start the company or start the project that you want to work on or whatever, right?
You can do whatever you want with the money.
Oh, no way. That's really cool. Actually, I didn't realize it was like that flexible. That's awesome. Yeah, because I know, like, I was listening to some podcasts and some interviews with you previously too, and like I remember you mentioning that, I think you said that you wanted to be like a nurse when you were growing up, if I remember correctly from some of these interviews. I'm curious, you know, how that skill and that desire of wanting to go and like help people and serve others kind of translated into business as well.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you caught that, because I actually really nerded out about being a midwife for a long time. And the reason why is, you know, again, my parents being entrepreneurial, they were like, no, I don't want you to do this. This is so hard. Go do something nice and stable at where you feel like you're making an impact. I'm like, cool. Sounds like being a nurse is for me. Don't quite want to be a doctor. Sounds like too much pressure. But, you know, nursing sounds cool. And I ended up, you know, trying to get lots of internships in that space, talking to lots of midwives, same sort of thing, doing a lot of research on my own as a kid. When I realized like the extent of my impact was, you know, going to be, kind of like, it doesn't allow me to really move around and take these skills and teach everyone about this skill. And so I wanted something where I could teach people lots of things. And knowing myself too, I can't really sit still in one place. So I need that sense of mobility as well. So knowing that, I think the skills of helping people and being kind to people is still super important every day, and customer success, as well as like meeting people and meeting investors, things like that. I think there was a transition point where I realized, oh my gosh, entrepreneurship is a career that I didn't even think about. Was when I realized, okay, I want to do this.
That's funny. My mom was actually a midwife for a long time in Germany.
That's awesome.
They definitely had some really interesting stories around that. But it's cool to see your, you know, it seems like you almost start from the perspective of you really want, you know, you want to help people, and you understand how to kind of empathize with them, and it clearly translates across a lot of these different industries, right? First wanted to be a nurse, translating to, okay, how do I potentially have a bigger impact or a different impact? But then doing maybe some of the customer interviews, talking to 1,000 people and really understanding some of those pain points, it is interesting to see how that definitely seems to be a correlation between, you know, developing an effective product that you understand your customers from. In that respect, I'd love to understand how you got some of those initial users and maybe some of those initial first paying customers onto the platform. I'm going to guess it came from, you know, talking to those other 1,000 people next, and then figuring out who might be a good fit to be the first couple of users.
You got it. It's just a matter of, you know, basically launching, I would say, if I had to give any sort of framework, basically launching every 2 weeks. And we still continue to do this today, where we're like, hey, we're building this. What do you think? Right? Like, and always sharing that to the world. I think a lot of people make the mistake of, unless they're doing it strategically, a lot of people make the mistake of, ooh, you know, it's not quite ready yet, so maybe I'll launch it next month, right? Versus, I know a lot of people who were successful in just creating like a paper prototype or like a presentation deck and saying, okay, this is what's gonna look like. Would you want this, right? I think, yeah, launch as early as possible, if possible, and do it really quickly so that you can improve the next iteration.
Can you describe your experience with Y Combinator and how that influenced how you think about running and starting a company today?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Y Combinator is a phenomenal program. We actually got rejected once and then got in the second time after, you know, all those amazing conversations with potential users. I think they definitely teach us to launch fast, fail fast, learn a lot in a really short period of time, and really building something people want. That's kind of their slogan. So I think that really influenced kind of our mentality, even moving forward past the program, of how do you build great product experiences beyond just, you know, for accelerator? You know, how do you build a long-lasting business, but also something that you can get feedback cycles really quickly?
For people that maybe didn't get into Y Combinator, or that's not the route they're going, are there any resources that you could recommend on, you know, a lot of the stuff you're saying kind of resonates with me in terms of, I think it's the Lean Startup book.
Yeah.
A lot of like the fail quickly, continuously innovate, fail. So I'm assuming that might be an interesting route, or any other resources that you can pick to where you can really dive in and make sure there's product market fit and you're interviewing customers and you're developing a successful product.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned Lean Startup. That's a really great place to start. We actually met Eric Reese along the way very early on when we were launching on one of those sites. He's like, cool product. And we're like,
that's
thanks,
awesome.
Eric. That's cool. But yeah, like I think that, you know, the world is vast. There's a lot of resources. Y Combinator has a great library of resources as well. And there are industry specific resources too. Like, for example, we sell to developers and we support developers. So there's like an incubator called HeavyBit that I've been recommended to a lot, where there's like lots of great open source resources on talking to developers and developer marketing, things like that. And so, yeah, I would say take your niche plus whatever business you're doing and look for stories. There's a lot of great stories online. There's like Indie Hackers. Medium is, of course, a great resource as well, where you don't necessarily have to read a full book to understand what people are doing. You know, you guys are doing podcasts and that's phenomenal. I've listened to a lot of podcasts that have been really helpful, where it's just those individual stories where they say, okay, I did this and this is how I did it. And I think those stories for me is the quickest way of learning, okay, maybe I should go and try that. I should do that experiment. But yeah, I would say the internet is vast. These are some helpful resources maybe for the B2B space, but there's plenty other ones as well.
That's awesome. And Lynn, like you're super motivated, you're a hustler, like you've started two companies now at this point, you're 22 years old. Do you find that your age and being as young as you are has been more helpful to go and get to where you are today, or has it like been caused barriers and been tough to kind of go and get past sometimes?
Yeah, I think I definitely experienced both sides of it, where people are like, wow, you're so young, this is awesome. Or I didn't realize you were so young and you're doing this. I think the great thing about that is some people feel personally inspired to go do something, whether they're a lot older or a lot younger. And I think being that influence is really, really great for impact. But on the flip side, yes, you definitely get doubters all the time. Yeah, there's lots of pressure too, because people expect you to do the next big thing all the time. So I think balancing your own perception of yourself is really important, and realizing that, you know, age is just a number, and you are the accumulation of experiences that you have. So if you can think about yourself in that perspective, it's a lot easier.
In terms of the next steps for Layer CI, what are your current goals and what are you hoping to kind of achieve in the next couple of years there? Is it kind of just grow as fast as possible? Is it to really focus in on the product? Is it a mix between the two?
Yeah, we're definitely a product-led business where, you know, with product, it's very much the test for it is, if you stopped all operations tomorrow, can it stand itself up, right? Can you continue to grow? Can you continue to support people? So getting to that point obviously requires a lot of people, a lot of more feedback from the audience, from customers, and yeah, it's just going to be a really awesome journey on that front to kind of grow it as a product-led business, to see some what we call, you know, I would say like market effects or you know, things like that, where you're seeing some virality with the product. On the other side, you know, still personally, I want to help as many people as possible. And hearing these stories honestly just makes my day. Just, this is how I use my product, your product to save time on this. This is how I use your product to stop this from happening. Those are all really inspiring for me. And also, you know, every time I do anything in this company, I'm able to kind of pass on that learning, whether through sharing it at a podcast or through Medium, or, you know, actually one-on-one in coffee chats. And that's always been something that I really enjoy. I think, yeah, overall, like I'm really excited for the next 10 years, if you will, for this company, and hoping it will continue to be on that trajectory to be a long-lasting business.
That's awesome. And Lynn, just to like rephrase Gio's question just a little bit, right? Like, I think what I always like is, and you mentioned this kind of podcast, like podcasts in a way are kind of like time capsules, right? And you go three, five years down the line, like you listen to this, and my hope for you is like you listen to some parts and you're like, I was so spot on with that. And then inevitably there's gonna be other parts where you're like, yeah, maybe that, you know, I could have thought about that differently or whatever when you're looking back on it. Like part of the cool part about doing this research was that back in 2017, when we were finding Tough Candy, right, you guys had that plan of 2020 million pieces out of landfills, and remove that plastic. You guys hit over 100,000 pieces. Do you have like a number or a statement like that too for Layer CI, where it's like, hey, 2023, we want to save 10 million hours of development from like preventing software bugs or something like that? Like, is that something you guys think about?
Yeah, I would say we do think about it, but not in those numbers where it's like, okay, I want X amount of employees or X amount of funding or X amount of, you know, companies to work with us, because that in itself is, you know, if you don't get there, how would you feel, right? Like, if you don't get there, how would you feel? Are you a failure if you do so or don't get there? And then what's next, right? Also, like in terms of like employees and investment count, I really don't think that's a great metric too. Like, you know, just because someone has 100 employees doesn't mean the business has been built, you know, as it should be. So really, I think if I had to put a statement out there, I hope I'm still happy building this business in 10 years and that the people I work with are happy as well. So that's my broad statement. And I actually think it's hard to achieve all of that then.
Yeah, I that's kind of, you kind of hit the nail on the head, where the intangibles are the statements where it's not like, oh, like, you know, 22-year-old founder like wants to be happy, right? But like usually it's like the 22-year-old founder wants to like do some like crazy like revenue or headcount number or whatever. But like at the end of the day, like that's what matters, right? And so that is the more important thing out of all of the other metrics, or, you know, you can't see that kind of stuff on a dashboard, which is cool. And I guess the other thing I wanted to maybe start wrapping up this conversation with is just like, you, like looking at the two businesses that you've started, they're always around a problem, not around a profit, right? And not to say that you're not making profit, like you guys have customers, you have paying customers, but like you're not starting a business and saying, I want to go and make $1 million. You're saying, I want to start a business and reduce weights in landfills. I want to start a business and I want to save software developers time. What are some of the other biggest problems that you're seeing occurring today that, for someone listening to this podcast, right, maybe you're going to be focusing heads down on Layer CI over the next 5 years, but someone else can go and maybe start looking into this industry or looking into this field and maybe start trying to build a business to solve a problem that you have on your mind?
Yeah, for sure. I think I could definitely broad strokes and say, oh, these are the top 10 trends, crypto, things like that. But honestly, those trends change super, super quickly. And some people will find the right trend, but not execute on it well. So that's why I think going after a niche is much better, where basically the way you should think about it is, okay, there's a giant market focus. So, okay, let me go help developers. Let me go help creators. Let me go help, you know, this industry, right? You want to look for an industry that's growing really quickly, that's more than $1 billion in terms of like overall industry market size. And then you want to take a small percentage of that and serve that market really, really well. So I think that going broad and then going niche is really important, honing in on something. If you can solve a problem for someone in your life, including yourself, right, you'll definitely have a stronger attachment to, okay, I wanna solve this. I understand it, you know, it's much closer to me. If you don't, you know, go out and do those interviews. Interview at least 100 people, I would recommend, to see if, you know, hey, is this actually a problem or are people just lying to me and being really nice to me about this, right? So you want to hear the brutal honesty there. And then I would say, if possible, you want to be able to help create more opportunities for others, whether it's helping them create jobs for themselves or, you know, something to build on top of that. Gary Tan is a great YouTuber and investor. And one thing he said was, you want to be a part of that world right now that's building on top of the API. So, you know, whatever that API is, right? If it's like something like Uber, it's creating jobs, right? It's creating a gig economy. Those kinds of things create a lot of impact. So if you could be a part of that market that is building the thing, that's going to be really impactful for not only for yourself to be inspired by all the things that are happening, but also to help others.
if someone has their niche or kind of their target audience in mind, maybe they're going after creators, but they don't actually have the product or the company in mind,
mm-hmm.
would you say it's helpful to maybe still have that, you know, 100, 200 conversations on, hey, what problems are you facing? Or do you think that's too broad for someone to come in, right? So say, for example, I want to start a company in the creator space to help creators. Should I try to narrow it down a little bit more before I hop on those 100 phone calls?
Yeah, I think it depends on where you're at. I would definitely be cognizant to not be too attached to your ideas, because I think as creators, as engineers, we're always so quick to like be so attached to our baby to some degree, right? It's basically like raising a kid. And if you kind of lead with that, people don't want to tell someone their kid is ugly, right? So it's like, you don't want to lead with that. You want to lead with, hey, I'm thinking about you. So yeah, I think if you're able to always have those conversations, just constantly, just ask different questions, right? Keep sharing those updates. So yeah, I think it depends on where you're at in terms of thinking about this. If early, yeah, ask those broad questions. If later, still ask those broad questions, but maybe ask more specific ones now that you've got, let's say, users of the product.
That's great advice. That's all I have on my end. Gio, I don't know if you have any other questions. Otherwise, we can start to wrap up. Lynn, if people found this conversation really interesting and want to get to know you, Layer CI, how you think, like even just kind of like learn a little bit more about yourself, where can they go and find you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm just Lynn Chen on LinkedIn. Or on Twitter, I'm at Lynn Cozy. So Lynn is L-Y-N and then C-O-Z-Y.
Awesome. We'll make sure to link to those in the show notes. And thank you again for hopping on the podcast. I think this is a great, great episode.
And thank you both as well. Cheers.